From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, the K-pop band BTS joins the ranks of U2 and Beyonce with a sold-out concert at the Rose Bowl. Then The National has a new album and short film directed by Mike Mills. Lead singer Matt Berninger describes how Mills helped create their new record.
Not only did he tear apart all of our songs, and he took vocals off of one song and put them over the drums of another, he just used it like a bunch of paint, and it made us rethink our own songs.
And we look at a program that provides mentors from Hollywood for teen girls who want to become writers. All that coming up on The Frame. If there's ever a big event going on at the Rose Bowl, I can usually tell. I live about 2 miles away, and the traffic can back up all the way to my house. But this weekend was something different than I've seen before. Gridlock hours before the K-pop band BTS was scheduled to go on Saturday night. Los Angeles Times music critic August Brown was there amongst the sellout crowd, and when we spoke, he described what it was like to witness the first of BTS's two biggest shows in America to date.
There were people that were camping out for days just to hear the sound check, not even the actual show. So, yeah, the demand was significant.
So how rare is that for a pop band to be able to sell, what, I think it's like 52,000 seats when the Rose Bowl is configured that way for a concert?
Yeah, they're in very rare air for that kind of a crowd. They did two nights of this, and, you know, they're at this point, they're in league with, you know, your Beyoncés and your One Directions as far as kind of the crowds they can pull for there. I think only U2 and their particular stage setup did more at the Rose Bowl recently. But yeah, and to do that for a non-English speaking act is really extraordinary. Now that proves the depth and breadth of the appeal of K-pop here.
I want to ask you about the scene when you arrived at the Rose Bowl, how far people had traveled, how long they had been there, and what the demographics look like.
So I was doing some interviews out in the crowd, and a huge number of people had traveled from all over America to come to this. K-pop acts usually tour on the major cities on the coast, but it's not as easy to get to see these bands in person as a lot of Western rock or pop acts. So they all made the occasion to come out, and the crowd for K-pop is really diverse. You know, obviously a lot of Korean Americans and Asian Americans, but it spanned the spectrum of every demographic. Some very young kids, some very amused parents at this kind of a show, and K-pop really is for everybody now. It's by far not just a niche genre in any way.
For people who don't know BTS, is there a song that you would point out to try to be kind of an entry point? And how would you characterize their music?
Probably right now, I'd say if you're a casual listener, I'd say the song Boy With Love. They recorded it with the pop singer Halsey, but she definitely takes a backseat to BTS on this one. They're definitely the bigger stars. An interesting mix of kind of U.S. pop melody sensibilities kind of run through the BTS filter, but honestly, a deep YouTube rabbit hole is the way to go. Like, the music videos are a huge part of this culture and a huge part of what gets people hooked. And the music, it's really eclectic. You know, there's kind of a unified feel to it, but it covers really hard EDM, hip-hop, really sugary pop ballads, a little bit of R&B. Like, there's really something for everybody in there, and I think that's part of BTS's appeal, is that you're not locked into one sound. Like, everybody gives something different.
How would you rank the show? What did they do, and how good was the performance?
Well, the scale of the production was unparalleled for anything I've ever seen in live K-pop, and I've seen a lot of live K-pop in my line of work. The performance dynamic was great. They've been honing this for a long time. I think they did 4 sold-out nights at Staples Center just last year, so they've already kind of arrived at a certain peak, and this was really just about expanding it. But it was over a 3-hour show, and I don't think anyone's gaze wandered for a second. I went outside to get a drink about halfway through, and there was nobody in line. Everybody was inside watching.
You got me. The staying power of boy bands of any stripe is often limited. And when you have seven members in a group, it's, you know, inevitable that somebody's going to leave. How much staying power do you think BTS has? And are some of the pieces interchangeable that somebody could leave and they could replace them?
Well, K-pop is really interesting in this regard because there's compulsory military service for men in the South Korean military. So it's kind of a perennial thing where your favorite boy bands will have to go away for a few years around usually like their early to mid-20s. Sometimes you can delay it, but sometimes you can't. And BTS is all in their early to mid-20s, and they're going to be up against this in a few years. And it's just an inevitable fact of life in K-pop for this. And I think they're big enough that they could survive a few years off. You know, they put out so much music, and they have such a kind of diverse catalog. And obviously the fan attention here is pretty extraordinary. It'll probably could last a few years while they do this, but that's a very unique part of K-pop culture that the boy bands have to go away to do the service for a few years.
Yeah, there is an exemption if you are an Olympic athlete, so maybe they could start a synchronized swimming team or something and get around it that way. The other thing that I think is worth noting is that BTS is part of a bigger trend about K-pop, and at Coachella not that long ago, Blackpink was a big hit. So what's happening in the broader spectrum of K-pop right now?
So K-pop has been breaking in America for about the last decade or so, and it was kind of it was an underground pop phenomenon of people were discovering this music on the internet, and it was very, you know, different and interesting and maybe a little contrarian to get really into it. And maybe about 5 years ago, some of the acts started signing to American major labels and began touring. The KCON festival downtown became this really popular event, and now it gets, I think, something like 150,000 people coming out to it. And but BTS set some new milestones. They were the first K-pop act to have a number one album on the Billboard 200, and they had not one but three of them over the course of the last year, which is pretty extraordinary. And they just started breaking attendance records, and they played SNL, and they proved that, you know, this isn't a niche genre that kind of exists outside of the mainstream U.S. music industry. It, in one big sense, is as big of a phenomenon as Beyoncé is live right now.
August Brown is a pop music critic at the LA Times. August, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much.
That concert audio you heard earlier was from a YouTube account called The Ultimate Dodo. Coming up, how did filmmaker Mike Mills end up producing the latest album by The National? In 2017, director Mike Mills emailed The National about making a film inspired by the band's music. Mills had just finished making his movie, 20th Century Women, and The National was finishing up its album, Sleep Well Beast. The resulting collaboration was more involved than either party anticipated. Together they made I Am Easy to Find, a 24-minute film starring Alicia Vikander, the Oscar-winning actress from The Danish Girl. And then Mills actually ended up producing the band's new album, also called I Am Easy to Find. The National is composed of Matt Berninger and two sets of brothers, Aaron and Bryce Dessner, and Scott and Brian Devendorf. This upcoming record is a testament to their long-standing collaborations. It features lyrics by Berninger's wife, Karen Besser, and guest performances by Gail Ann Dorsey, Lisa Hannigan, Sharon Van Etten, the Brooklyn Youth Choir, and more. Following a recent concert and film screening, I spoke with Mills and The National's Matt Berninger about how their partnership started.
I totally cold called them. I didn't actually call them, but my agent figured out your managers.
You went through professional channels.
Yeah, but then you guys jumped on it very sweetly, and I got Matt's number. We had a great, funny phone call.
Yeah,
and I was just calling about doing a video for
something off of Sleep Well Beast.
Yeah, and you wanted to do a video based on that album.
Yeah, so I was like, oh. You know, wonder if there's a video. And Matt just quickly said, well, how about something else? Like, how about something bigger? We have all these other songs. And like within a day or two, I got this big dump of maybe 10, 12, 14 songs, some in total sketch form, some pretty done. And the idea was like, what might you do with this? And this very trusting, very sort of unknown door opening of like, what could happen?
Well, the fascinating thing about this collaboration, I think the typical model for doing some sort of music video is the director comes in, pitches his or her idea for the video. The band shows up on the beach and, you know, plays the song or pretends to play the song, and you do it. And this changed fundamentally very early in the process. And that is, Matt, the band started looking at and listening to what Mike was doing in his film and started incorporating those ideas into the work that was underway on the new record.
Well, not only did he tear apart all of our songs, and he took vocals off of one song and put them over the drums of another, would take the end of something, put it on the front of it. He just used it like a bunch of paint, and it made us rethink our own songs. But then with his script and those bits of description of a day or a moment of a thing that happens, and then the footage that he got with Alicia, and just it happened so fast. Alicia agreed to do it so fast. And when we started seeing that, it just opened it up again. And my wife started writing even more. And we started thinking of this as not a national record, but like kind of more of a, it was something, it's a new thing.
Mike, I want to ask you about the film itself. It is roughly, I think, 24 minutes. Alicia Vikander plays a woman from birth to, spoiler alert, death. And there's not a lot of dialogue. There's some overheard bits, there's music through it. At what point did you decide that you were going to do this idea of following this one woman throughout her life, have one actor, Alicia Vikander, play her? She's just going to be a child, an infant at the beginning, and an old woman at the end.
I love condensing huge swaths of life, or I love contrasting the seemingly banal moments of life with the seemingly very important parts, and it felt very much to fit into the umbrella of sort of Matt's themes or the themes of the national. It felt like very cohesive together. And I had just met Alicia before, and we had expressed like a desire to sort of find something to do together. And then the idea just sort of plopped into me of like, okay, a whole life. How am I going to do that? I don't want to do makeup and all that. And I, watching Alicia and Ex Machina, I was like, I can imagine her just playing every developmental stage, every physical age. And I'd love to throw that challenge at her and see if she even bites. And she just wrote right back like, okay, great.
Matt, the band is made up of men, but I want to play a song from the album that features the voice of Gaylan Dorsey. It's called You Had Your Soul With You.
I have owed it to my heart, every word I've said. You have no idea how hard I died.
So elsewhere on the record, you have vocalists like Kate Stables, Lisa Hannigan, and Matt, I'll start with you. Why was the female voice important to this record?
I mean, the national is five men, but my wife has been writing lyrics with me more so on this record than ever before, but since Boxer, so 10, 12 years ago or something. So I've never thought of us as a dude. I haven't thought of us as a bunch of dudes in a long time. So also, the film informed that, needed that, and also the song you mentioned, my wife wrote every word and melody on that one. We did that on a lot of songs, and a lot of that was Mike, you kind of choosing where to do it. And it didn't have much to do with gender casting the film or the characters in the film in any way, but it was to open up this fabric of identity and voices. That was a lot of you and Aaron and Bryce and stuff.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about the song you just played, You Had Your Soul With You, it's written by Corinne. And it's really from her perspective. There's right. An I and a U, and the I is Corinne, and the U is, I think, maybe Matt, or who knows? Songs operate on many levels, but on
I
one
hope,
level,
I
it's
hope
that.
It's me.
And anyways, Matt is singing the I, so there's this very interesting.
We do that all the time, though. Yeah.
Transposition that's going on in their music a lot. I've learned, and weirdly, just started happening in the film. Having a female lead character, we wanted to have female voices, not just to represent her, but to be part of her world. Or Matt often talks about as like the fabric of beings that Elisa's character kind of represented.
We're talking with director Mike Mills and Matt Berninger from The National. They have a new album and companion film called I Am Easy to Find. I want to play something from the film. There is not a lot of dialogue in this Mm-mm. film, but there is a scene with a father reading to his daughter.
Where is she? Where are her hands? Is she looking out the window? Where are her eyes? Is she looking under the bed?
So, Mike, I'm going to ask you, first of all, about that story. He's not reading some old book. It's something that you created. What is the story?
So, you know, when you make a film nowadays, it's a highly litigious situation. So anything, any text, anything, you have to get the rights to. And I was like, ugh, I don't want to go through the hassle of, you know, getting the rights to a children's book. So I just wrote one. And I have a 7-year-old, so it's very easy for me to think of it. And I really enjoyed it, actually. So I wrote a long text, which he read. And then in the film, it also, he slips into doing Matt's lyrics. Right. It goes from that. That was just a real interesting kind of play that we were doing throughout this whole project of like, is it the film? Is it the album? Is it Matt's lyrics? Is it something else? Another song happened like this was, this film is largely told through subtitles, which are kind of like indicating what's happening. And again, we had all been sharing these subtitles. Everyone had the text, and I knew that Bryce was going to work with the Brooklyn Youth Choir. But I didn't know that I was going to get this song, this like super gorgeous song of the choir singing the subtitles like a song.
This is Dust Swirls in Strange Light. Let's listen to it.
The sunlight on her skin, dust swirls in strange light, the feeling of the rug on her body, the hum from the speaker, she learns how to lie, her father's voice, her mother's heartbeat, the orange color.
I think this is one of my favorite songs on the album. It's almost spiritual. I mean, it's like sacred music. It's something you would hear in church, almost as a psalm would be sung by a choir. What was it like as a artist to start?
To have nothing to do with it and just to hear it for the first time and be have my mind blown and
but
just
for you
cry?
As a,
it was great.
But for you as a songwriter to get what Mike is giving you and turn it into music.
Well, I mean, honestly, that was one that I didn't touch. That was Bryce begging for more words, and I wasn't giving him anything. I was out. And so he went on his own and just grabbed the script. Or did you send him the script?
Well, he had the script, but that's a very particular ordering and an editing that Bryce did and a particular kind of repetition, and it's really beautiful what
and
he did.
And he wrote the music, and I think he wrote that melody, and he did that. That was him and the Brooklyn Youth Chorus just going to town. And is it based on some drums from Brian, too?
So that was originally meant to go on the film, and it does. And then I heard it and I was like, whoa, that's a song. That should just be a song in your album.
Wow.
So it kind of gives you an idea of like the layering and the openness or surprise. We're all sort of like hunting for like, oh, how can we change this? How can we reuse this for something else? And without permission and happily, like we just sort of would take things or like, they gave me all the stems of their songs and I would totally move things around, largely because Matt was like, do anything you want. And he said that several times. I was sort
just
of like
what every studio says to you whenever you're making a movie, right?
And he's like, but I think he said it so often that I was like, I think he wants me really to do anything I want and wants me to kind of surprise them. And I love that. So
I didn't, but it was a risk. I didn't always agree with Mike, but I always genuinely 100% trusted him. Sometimes you just have ways of your brain puts you in little corners that aren't even there. There aren't even corners there, but you think you are. And Mike just like walked through a card house and knocked all the cards down and we were all just standing and he just told us where to go, you know?
As we go out, let's listen to I Am Easy to Find, which is the name of the album and the name of the film. Mike and Matt, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks.
Mills' movie will be shown tonight at the theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Coming up, a mentorship program that gives teenage girls some insight into writing for Hollywood.
Am I ever coming down? I need to find some lower thinking if I'm gonna stick.
And now there's a mentoring program in Hollywood called Write Girl. That's Write with a W. And it pairs actors and writers with teen girls. At a recent star-studded event, a few prominent actors brought some of the teen stories to life. Carla Javier, KPCC's arts education reporter, takes us there.
There's a space off Vine Street called the Linwood Dunn Theater. It's very Hollywood. There are these giant, like bigger-than-life-sized Oscar statuettes that flank hallways lined with behind-the-scenes photos of Hollywood hits. In one of those hallways, I meet 18-year-old Sam from East LA.
I'm a Write Girl. I've been a Write Girl for 6 seasons.
Sam is referring to a free LA-based program called Write Girl. That's W-R-I-T-E. It's for aspiring writers like her, ages 13 to 18, who are looking for guidance from women writers who volunteered to share their expertise. Write Girl pairs hundreds of teen girls with professionals for workshops and one-on-one mentoring. The teen girls are at a vulnerable stage in their life, so Write Girl asked us not to use their full names. Every month, Write Girl offers sessions focused on different aspects of writing. And Sam is here in this glamorous space owned by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences because at the last workshop in character and dialogue, the Write Girls wrote scripts. And now the organization has arranged for actors to take those stories from the page to the stage. And Sam's hoping her script gets chosen.
That's very exciting. Just fingers crossed I get something in there.
This event helps the organization raise enough money to help the teens. And it's also a chance for them to see their work interpreted by professionals. And not just any professionals, but a star-studded cast. This time, actors like Keiko Agena from Gilmore Girls, Kirby Howell-Baptiste, Wayne Brady, and Seth Rogen are bringing the girls' writing to life. The actors perform 14 of the scripts, including Sam's. Here's Howell Baptiste reading a monologue Sam wrote.
Seriously, how easy does he think this is? Stab, stab, you dead. No. You see, my job takes precision. I have to track the dragon down, find the lair, hide out, and go through this whole process.
We're like this scene, written by 17-year-old Rachel, where Keiko Agena plays a student who's excited she got into her dream college until she notices something on her acceptance letter.
My dedication to athleticism and commitment to water polo. Wait. Water polo. I don't even know how to swim.
A panel of female screenwriters give feedback on the scripts. Like on that last one, producer and screenwriter Josanne McGibbon, known for Runaway Bride and Desperate Housewives, has this to say.
One thing that's so hard to do that you did is really take us on such a journey.
The show's hosted by actor and New York Times bestseller Lauren Graham. This is her first year as a Write Girl mentor herself.
Being creative, being playful, having fun, finding your voice. I wish I'd had that at a younger age.
We caught up after the show and she told me she mentors with Write Girl because she believes it's important for teen girls in particular to find their voice.
That can only be positive for the creative world, for the political world, for the world.
Let's talk about that for a second, the creative world. In TV, women writers represented just 25% of the writers on broadcast network shows, according to a 2018 study from the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film at San Diego State. And in film, the stats are even more dismal. Women writers represented just 15% of all writers on last year's top 100 films. It's something Victoria, who comes to Write Girl from the Valley, says she thinks about. I caught up with her by the red carpet after the show.
We have too many of the same stories, which, you know, not to invalidate anyone's experiences, but new stories need to be told.
She's just 14 years old, and this is her first year with Write Girl. Her script got chosen, too.
I heard, like, the names Alex and Diane, which are the characters in the story, and I, like, freaked out, and I turned to her, and I was like, oh, my God, Mom, like, this Seth Rogen and Wendy, and this. I was, like, freaking out and everything.
In her scene, the characters are getting ready for a party when Alex, played by Rogen, has something to get off his chest.
I know you don't get it, and you've lived your whole life not, you know, having to tug at your shirt to make sure your stomach wasn't bulging out, and you've never had to wear massive hoodies to hide your hideous body, and you can walk into a mall and not feel the changing room stalls closing in on you and taunting you for not fitting in a suit. And I'm glad you don't, and I hope you never do, because it's soul-crushing, and I love you, and I wouldn't ever want you to experience something like that.
Seth delivered the lines a little bit differently than what I had imagined, but I actually found it to be a lot more, like, moving, the way that it was so, like, honest.
During the panel discussion, writer, actor, and director Lauren Miller Rogen had this to say about Victoria's work.
The bravery that a writer can have in putting some of those really raw emotions in a scene can be so rewarding to the people who are enjoying your material.
Victoria says she was thrilled to get this kind of feedback on her first real script.
Oh my goodness, like, if you're telling me that this is good, like, maybe I can actually, like, make something out of this.
That is kind of the point, says Right Girls founder and executive director Karen Taylor.
They have a lot of potential. If you work with them when they're young, before they get that idea that it's unattainable or they get doors closed on them.
She says that's one of the reasons why they host this event with the Academy in their building.
You just get this feeling like you're part of this whole lineage of film writers. I'm not at school anymore. I'm not at a community center. I'm right here in Hollywood with Hollywood writers that are going to help me do this.
Next month, the girls take on creative nonfiction by writing memoir. The audio of the performances is courtesy of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. For The Frame, I'm Carla Javier.
And that's our show for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.